You are listening to WERA LP Arlington 96.7 FM.
If you are the Republican leadership, and this is what your goals are, your goals are to give huge tax breaks to the very richest people in this country. Your goals are ultimately to privatize Social Security so that Wall Street can make money from that. Privatize Medicare so the insurance companies can make more money. Privatize education. Do away with public schools. If those are your goals and you said that to the American people, you think you get a lot of lower? There are many members of the Congress today, Republicans, who not only will not raise the minimum wage, which is $5.15 an hour, you know what they will tell you, honestly? They believe in abolishing the minimum wage. Did you know that? Check it out. I'm telling you the truth. So that if Americans can work for $3 an hour or $2 an hour, not a problem. Now, if you had an agenda like that and you went before the American people, tax breaks for the rich, destruction of Medicare, destruction of Social Security, as we know it, lowering the minimum wage or abolishing it, how many votes did you think you'd get? Not a whole lot.
You are listening to WERA LP 96.7 FM in Arlington, Virginia. This is Enlighten Me. I'm your host, Andrea Cambron, and every Wednesday, like always, I am glad to be here to give you what I think should be highlighted in the news. And today is no exception. We will have on the program Attorney Charles Coleman. He has been looking at this issue with Colin Kaepernick, the NFL player who has not yet been signed. Guess what? There is a boycott that is set to take place soon if he does not get signed. And we will be here to talk about the boycott, the protest, and how kneeling turned into a fight for Black Americans' rights. So Charles Coleman, Attorney Charles Coleman, will be on the program later on today. You are listening to WERA LP 96.7 FM. You are listening to WERA LP 96.7 FM in Arlington, Virginia. This is Enlighten Me. I'm your host, Andrea Cambron, and I am so excited because this is one of my favorite people, because every time he says something on Facebook, I just, you know, do a high five, hey, yes, thank you, every time he does. But the latest that we will be talking about is this NFL boycott. Colin Kaepernick has been potentially or allegedly blackballed from the NFL. And we will be talking with Attorney Charles Coleman. He was a former trial attorney in the New York District Office of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And he will be talking to me because his presence on social media and online is pretty, you know, he has a following. Charles, thank you so much for joining me on Enlighten Me.
Andrea, thank you so much for having me. Always good to be here. Really, really excited about today's conversation.
I am too. Okay, so let me first say, before we even start, that I am not a football fan. I've never been a football fan. I just don't like it. And this is where I am coming from. Okay, so sure. So before we even start this is where I'm coming from. I don't think that it is in our best interest, meaning African Americans, it is in our best interest to even be a part of a league that, for one, doesn't care about our mental health.
Sure.
And furthermore, the rate of the lifespan of an NFL player is what, 2.5-3 years?
Right.
Something like that. So you spend
about 3 years.
Something of that nature. So you spend all of your formative years striving for this end goal to be an NFL player that potentially could only last 2.5 years. Right. I just don't see the math, the statistics. I don't see why we are tunneling our youth toward this goal. So that is where I come from, first of all.
Okay.
So saying all of that, we are approaching this potential NFL boycott, right?
Right.
So tell us a little bit about, because I've read up, but I'm not an expert on this at all. So this boycott is stemming from Colin Kaepernick last year taking a knee and basically saying that I want to say it starts with being a banner, but that is so not it. The song, what is the song National Anthem. Thank you. The National Anthem that they sing is not for him, right?
Right.
That is the stance that he took. All of a sudden, that stance became a rallying cry for Black Lives Matter. That became, you know, something where African Americans have said, hey, you know what? He's right. And from that, it seems that the NFL owners have said, well, then if that's your case, then never mind.
Right. This is a really interesting discussion on a number of levels. I think you hit on what is a very, very controversial but valid point when you open talking about, particularly within communities of color, why is it that we sort of shepherd so many of our young people to the potential for a career that could only last them between two and if they're really, really good and really healthy, 4 years max. And
right.
It is, in a lot of ways, sort of the most dangerous get-rich-quick schemes that's out there.
Yes. It is crazy to me.
Right. I think that we do sort of, you know, it begs a larger question or raises a larger question about what we value as a community and where we sort of put out values. I run a mentoring program in Brooklyn, New York.
Yes.
And it always amazes me to see the number of parents and family and friends that turn out for basketball and football games in particular,
mm-hmm.
but who, when it comes time for award season or academic honors, are absent.
Yes.
And it really does say a lot about what we invest in as a community and where our priorities are.
Yes.
Nevertheless,
yes.
Having said all of that, I am a fan of football, and this Colin Kaepernick situation has been or was initially difficult for me to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And as you've already said, a lot of it came from Colin Kaepernick having vocalized a stance against police brutality in America and against what so much of the the National Anthem actually represents, as well as continued violence and oppression against people of color, oftentimes perpetuated by law enforcement.
Right, right.
And he exercised his constitutional right of freedom of speech, and it appears as though from most folks who are observing, whether they're observing with inside information or whether they're observing casually, that Colin Kaepernick has effectively been blackballed from the NFL.
Right, right.
And I, along with many other people, have decided that because of that, we will not be supporting the NFL in any way, shape, form, or fashion this upcoming season. That includes fantasy football, which I absolutely love. I'm a huge fantasy football person.
Yes.
I will not be participating in fantasy football. I will not be supporting venues that are showing the games. I will not be purchasing any merchandise from NFL.com or from any NFL vendors. And quite frankly, you know, I, along with a number of my friends, are going to do our best to avoid spending money with any of the sponsors for the NFL.
Okay. So it goes as far as the sponsors as well.
Yes. There are a number of reasons why I think the NFL has sort of had this coming. And I think for me, Colin Kaepernick and the situation that has ensued with him is probably the straw that broke the camel's back. But just looking at the NFL sort of inconsistent response to violence against women, for example,
yes.
to how they've dealt with other issues regarding, you know, their players and criminal activity, and now dealing with Colin Kaepernick, there's a level of sort of inconsistency in terms of what they want to apply morality to that I just find to be very, very unacceptable, and it doesn't align with my values, and it doesn't align with a lot of people's values. But for me, you know, what it boils down to. In this particular instance, what Colin Kaepernick did was he exercised his constitutional right, and he said, listen, I'm going to have a seat because me having a seat, me taking a knee, I am affirming my right and the other and the rights of other people who look like me to exist. I'm simply affirming our existence. I'm affirming that we have a right to exist. We have a right to exist free from worry and trepidation and apprehension about being targeted by law enforcement in a violent way. We have a right to exist without our bodies being violated. And I am going to affirm that right by not standing during the national anthem. And the NFL has effectively said, you were out of line for doing that.
Yeah.
And we're not going to allow you the platform under which to make those types of statements. And for me, the choice was clear and simple. Even though I'm a football fan, even though it's something that I enjoy, when you are that intent on silencing someone who wants to affirm my right to exist, then there's no reason that I should be supporting you, because you've made it very clear. You've drawn a line in the sand. You made it very clear on how you stand and who you are and what you're about. And I have to make sure that where I spend my money, where I promote my time, where I sort of, you know, designate my energies to, those things need to be in line. And that's absolutely not what I'm about. And that's why I, along with so many others, have decided to boycott this season.
Well, and that's the other thing. I mean, this boycott, which, by the way, has gone, has at least 130,000 plus signatures and counting. And I think at the time, you have to have 100,000 signatures in order for this letter, this boycott, to get sent to the NFL owners and you know, to actually get some attention towards it. You know, that's exactly what, and as a person, Charles, who lives in civil rights spaces and who, you know, actively advocates for, you know, Black lives and the rights, this kind of protest is interesting because of the fact that it is something that people love, right? NFL.
Right.
And it is something that, you know, people are saying, well, wait a minute. Wait, what? You know, for a person to just kneel, you know, it wasn't as if Colin Kaepernick was you know, using his platform as an NFL player to actively, you know, go for another, you know, go to talk about another race or to actively disparage another race. This is something that he just felt in his heart to do because he didn't agree with the lyrics, really.
Correct.
I mean, you know, this is, it is extraordinary that the NFL owners have taken this position. But apparently, I mean, you know, again, I'm not a football buff. Apparently, this is, you know, the stance that they have always taken was that the players were the, you know, they were owned by the teams. And, you know, as long as you're owned by that team, you are a player and nothing else.
Well, we have a tendency to treat the term white supremacy like it's a bad word. It's something that we sort of reserve for the most racist, the most bigoted, and the most blatant acts of bigotry and discrimination and racism. But the reality is that that white supremacy is systemic.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's systemic, it has a way of sort of infiltrating and proliferating throughout all of our regular aspects of life. And to be frank, Colin Kaepernick is not the first person who has been an athlete who's taken a stance who has been silenced. I want to challenge any of your listeners, as well as you, if you're not familiar, Google Craig Hodges.
Mm.
Craig Hodges played for the Chicago Bulls back in the 90s.
And mm-hmm.
He infamously, during a visit to the White House, handed George Bush a letter talking about the disparity in prison sentences that were being given to nonviolent drug offenders and the disproportionate way that people in urban communities were being locked up for low-level drug offenses. This was on a team where Michael Jordan played. They went to the White House. Craig Hodges, at this point, he was at the peak of his career. Within 2 years of that visit, within 2 years of that action, he was out of the NBA.
Wow.
He was blackballed from the NBA. We've never heard his name. I mean, I think we live in a different environment in terms of, you know, Colin Kaepernick is a higher profile athlete. There's a 24/7 media cycle that enables us to have greater amounts of information filtered to us so
right,
that stories
right.
like that don't get lost.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. This is a narrative that has existed around professional sports for a very long time. As long as you're scoring touchdowns, as long as you're slamming basketballs through the hoop or shooting three-pointers or hitting home runs, we're okay with that. But the minute that you step into the realm of social activism,
mm-hmm.
you immediately become the villain. We saw it with Muhammad Ali. We saw it with Bill Russell in Boston as a Boston Celtic. I mean, in that case, ownership actually was behind him. But if you look at public opinion and how many people, much of white America responded to these people,
yeah.
it's very similar. This is sort of a remix of a story that we've seen before. But I'm very encouraged by the fact that so many people have decided to stand up and say, no more, not again.
Yeah. So a lot of people are saying that Colin Kaepernick, who I guess technically walked away from his contract instead of not being re-signed. And let me get this correct, because I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to be correct on this. He
sure.
had a contract and he decided to be a free agent. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So in that stance, the 49ers decided to let him go. Because he decided to be a free agent.
Right. They decided that they did not want to re-sign him, and he has
right.
not been signed by another team since, despite the fact that when you look at his statistics, he's absolutely in the ballpark of most, you know, backup quarterbacks in
mm-hmm.
the league, and there have been several injuries to teams that could use his services, and yet they've chosen quarterbacks who did not have equal numbers to him
right.
In terms of their performance. I also want to be clear about something. It's really important that we understand that at this point, it's a lot bigger than Colin Kaepernick having a job.
Oh, sure. You know, yes.
You know, and so for people who sort of want to make this about, well, you know, he walked away from his contract and so on and so forth, you know, while those things may have led up to this moment, what we are talking about is a much larger conversation about affirming everyone's right to exist in equal fashion. We're having a conversation about freedom of speech. We're having a conversation about personal pride and expression. We're having a conversation fundamentally about equality and what it means to be able to have your voice heard and not have your voice continuously silent. Silence. If you look at the lyrics, and this is something that people don't do, I challenge all of your listeners, go and research the lyrics of the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
The stanzas that we don't sing are abhorrent,
yeah.
especially to people of color in America. If you have this information, if you understand these things, I don't know how anyone can claim to be a champion of equality or look at everyone in a similar light and believe that people of all races are equal, and believe that this is a song that should be celebrated and should be heralded by a country where we're supposed to be equal, when clearly we continue to have time and time again things that are not. I want to make a really important point. Today is the anniversary of Michael Brown's killing, and it amazes me that despite the fact that for centuries we have been having conversations about equality in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are we still having that conversation, we're actually just fighting for the right to be able to voice that.
Yeah.
Really give voice to our truth and our pain. And I think that that's what this boycott is really all about. And so Colin is very, you know, Cap is a symbol for a lot more than just a millionaire quarterback who doesn't have a job right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more beneath the surface, and it's really important that as we engage in conversation about the boycott, for those who disagree, for those who agree, that they understand, you know, that there's a multitude of layers of perspective that's involved here.
Well, definitely, Charles. And speaking on that, I mean, you know, again, my stance, as I told you in the beginning, is the fact that why are we trying to attain to something that, you know, at the end is a short career and it leads to the destruction of our minds. I mean, you know, this is something that, you know, I personally am thinking to myself, like, why would we support a system that, you know, leads to that? However, since, you know, a lot of people do, You know, you're right. I think that it has to come to this larger conversation of the fight for our rights and the fight for our ability to actively display, you know, our dissent to something without being blackballed or without being you know, without having our rights taken away from us in the process.
Right, right. I think that's a huge point.
Yes. All right. So speaking on, you know, my earlier point with regards to, you know, CTE and, you know, football's incessant, you know, ability,
culture,
yes, of, you know, you know, just having players, you know, play and knowing that they are, you know, playing to possibly their death. The New York Times came out with a piece a couple of weeks ago where they did this survey on and where they scanned brains, former brains of NFL players.
Right.
And they found that out of the 111 brains that they scanned, 110 had CTE. And
right.
And they were tracing back to, you know, high school, college and high school with similar results.
Right.
And I this worries me because, like I said earlier, it seems, you know, the NFL is 70% African-American. And these are just the players that made it. Right. These are just the players
right.
that have finally made a career from their high school and college years. And I often wonder what happens to, you know, the college players that played and the high school players that played and how they develop and how they, you know, go on and lead their lives. And, you know, again, leading to this broader discussion, Charles, and I know I didn't specifically say that I was going to talk about this before, but leading to this broader discussion, you know, it worries me that when we talk about the fight for our rights, that we are tunneling our children to this these sports.
Right. I think that there are a number of sort of fallacies around how we, you know, idolize entertainers and athletes,
mm-hmm.
and I think that those fallacies contribute to, you know, moms and dads wanting their children to sort of assume these roles in industries that, quite frankly, are not safe for them.
Yeah.
Our children are putting themselves at risk, and people want to make the argument that, well, you know, people choose to play football. And that is true. It is a choice. But I think, more importantly, the exposure that people have to football comes ultimately at the approval of a parent or a guardian. Who,
yeah.
You know, says that, oh, it's okay, I want you to go out there and score as many touchdowns as you can. And so I think, you know, the fact that they have not been able to make the game safer is an issue and has a disparate impact, particularly on communities of color, because of the fact that there are so many of us who play the game and so many of us who, you know, come from urban communities,
yeah.
who look at that as
a way
exit
out.
From their present circumstance,
mm-hmm.
without considering how many other things might give them similar, if not better, and more long-standing opportunities for them.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's such an important topic that we need to explore further, especially for the fact that you know, these communities, even though they need a quote unquote way out, you know, Charles, I think that there are other ways. I really
sure.
do. I think
course,
there are other ways, you know, that we can, you know, try to free our people without using sports as a way to get there. So Charles, one more thing before I let you go.
Absolutely.
So, you know, this has been an issue that, you know, we have seen. And again, as a person that lives in civil rights spaces, a person that is an activist by, you know, just being a person that cares about African-Americans, you know, enjoying free spaces in this country.
Sure.
You know, one of the things that I have seen with Colin Kaepernick and with people that have looked at this boycott is that, you know, some people are advocating that, you know, why do this boycott now? Why because of Kaepernick? Why do the boycott now versus before when, you know, there were atrocities in the NFL and, you know, things that we could have boycotted before? Why Kaepernick? Why now?
I think that that's a valid question to a point. I think that it's understandable that the NFL has committed a number of sort of atrocities in terms of, you know, where they have made clear their priorities are. Mm-hmm. We have not collectively responded. I also don't think that that's a significant enough justification to not do it. The fact that we may not have gotten off of our seats or you know, gotten into the game, so to speak, pardon the pun, but the fact that we, you know, have stood on the sidelines in spaces where perhaps we should have been more active and perhaps we should have, you know, actually done something and maybe boycotted before now, mm-hmm. it's certainly not an excuse to continue to remain apathetic and to not boycott now.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, to me, I tell people all the time, that's empty logic for you to suggest, well, you know, there are so many other things that we could have gotten behind and we didn't get behind those, so we're not going to get behind this. That's just really bad logic, and I think, whereas I do understand people's feeling that in that way, like I said, you know, I mentioned the NFL's sort of inconsistent stance on domestic violence and domestic abuse and other criminal activity. Absolutely, those things are very valid, and they're valid points that I think, you know, would have warranted people stepping up and stepping out against the NFL in that regard. But simply because we didn't do it then, I would make the argument to those folks, hey, that's actually even more reason why it's important to get it right now. Mm-hmm. We've missed the ball before. We've dropped the ball before. Let's make sure that this time, as we are having conversation about someone's right to affirm his existence and our existence as a community and as a people, let's not drop the ball yet again. And let's make sure that we get it right and that our message is heard and that it's effective and that it's felt.
Yeah. Charles Coleman, he is a civil rights attorney. You have a couple of projects that you are constantly work on, Charles. Tell us a little bit about some of the projects that you currently work on.
Thanks so much. I mean, my biggest project that I have going right now is a web series called Black Brilliance 360.
Yes!
Black Brilliance. Yes. Black Brilliance 360. You can catch us on YouTube. It is essentially your opportunity to enter into the safe space where black men have conversations about what it is to be a black man and deconstruct the very, very complicated, very complex institution that black manhood is.
Yeah.
You know, we have this misconception that black men don't communicate with each other or mm-hmm. that we don't communicate at all. And mm-hmm. that could not be further from the truth. We do it all the time, but we do it in spaces where we feel safe, where we feel like we can express ourselves without having an excessive amount of judgment or pushback. And so what I wanted to do with Black Brilliance 360 was to create an opportunity for people to really have that exposure to it and really generate conversations in their own spaces. So please check us out on YouTube, Black Brilliance 360, subscribe to the channel, and then after that, find us on social media, the same thing, Black Brilliance 360 on Instagram as well as on Facebook.
Nice. Is there anything that about the web series, you know, since you've been doing it? You've been doing it for about a year, right?
Correct.
Is there anything that you have learned, you know, from the talks that you know, surprised you the most out of the you know, conducting the series?
I think the biggest thing to understand is just that us as black people, we have so many different elements and so many different iterations of blackness across mm-hmm. the diaspora, right? Like, there are so many different versions of what blackness looks like,
mm-hmm.
and gaining a global perspective on that has really been eye-opening because particularly as American blacks, we have a tendency to look at it in a very myopic way where mm-hmm. we don't necessarily recognize or give credence to narratives or constructs around blackness that we don't, you know, that we're not familiar with.
Yeah,
one of the things that the show has forced me to do is to reexamine how I look at blackness and reexamine, you know, what it looks like, because even when it doesn't look like or mirror that which I'm familiar, that still doesn't mean that it doesn't have a legitimate place at the table and in the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
been a beautiful thing, you know, for me to realize and to accept and to really embrace.
Yeah. And you also have a program for kids, right?
Yes. I also run a program in Brooklyn, New York called EDGE New York City. It is EDGE is an acronym for Empower, Develop, Grow, and Educate. And it's a mentoring program that I started when I was a prosecutor in Brooklyn. I really saw an opportunity for me to create a safe space, again, for young people, particularly young men of color, to sort of help them navigate those formidable years when they start getting a sense of who they are, getting a sense of independence, of agency, and really sort of understanding how the world is going to view them and how they're going to view the world. And so creating a space where they had models of different examples of black men and men of color to help them in that space was really important to me. So EDGE has been rocking for... we're coming up on almost 10 years. I'm really excited.
That is really exciting. That is really exciting. Charles Coleman, civil rights attorney, EDGE founder, Black Brilliance 360. You've got it all.
Thank you, Charles.
Yes. The thing about it is I knew that you were the perfect person to have on because of the fact that you do all this stuff outside in the community, and because, you know, you speak so broadly on issues of civil rights that I thought you'd be the perfect person to have on today. So thank you so much for joining us on Enlighten Me.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Andrea. Anytime, just give me a call.
Oh, always, always. That was Charles Coleman. He is a civil rights attorney, the founder of EDGE New York and Black Brilliance 360. Please check out what he has for African-American men, because he has been doing some really great work throughout the years. All right. I really appreciate him talking to me about Colin Kaepernick, too, because, you know, he could probably say stuff better than I could. All right, you're listening to Enlighten Me on WERALP 96.7 FM. You know, I really appreciate, you know, if you really liked the segment on Colin Kaepernick, please, you know, check out Charles. He's been doing some great work. He's on a couple of places, CNN to be one of them, and MSNBC, I know for sure. So he's been doing some really great work. Charles Coleman, civil rights attorney and founder of EDGE New York. So hope you enjoyed the interview today, and I'm so glad that you joined me on Enlighten Me. Join me every week from 4 to 5 p.m. WERALP 96.7 FM. Like soldiers, we stand up. Remember when Tupac told us, keep our head up. And even when the times get rough, we get up. Treat your life like a stage, you can hit it, tear it up. Pass the mic, let us come through. Don't ever, ever let them stop or try to block you. You gotta tell them you're something better than any other. You never settle, you next level, yeah, you're making moves. Put your hands up high.
Funding for WERA is provided by Rust Insurance Agency, LLC, a locally owned independent insurance agency since 1889. For more information, visit rustinsurance.com.